Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod.
Andrew, the band is back together. You're back from your sabbatical, and I'm hoping that you are now South African, because this is a South African rugby pod now, Andrew.
embarrassing. You've been embarrassing over the last couple of weeks, how far you've been.
No, mate, we've grown. Mate, we've grown into the South African audience. Niche.
Yeah, how far you've been up Eben's arse, but we'll come to that a bit later. Great to be back. We'll be chatting all things Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. Talking about Quinn's spirited semi-final defeat in Toulouse, a hard-fought win for Leinster over at Croke Park against the Saints, and we'll be having a chat, talking about the Saints, with their star fly half, Finn Smith.
Of course we will. We'll also be talking about the two biggies, Gloucester's win over Benetton, and the one I was at, actually, talking of South Africa.
Fucking climb out.
Was.
Climb out, Jim.
Out of all the games at the weekend, I went to the Sharks versus Clermont at the Stoop, of all places, random to be at the Stoop. The Army and Navy were playing over the road at virtually the same time. Bit weird, but we'll get onto that as well. But the atmosphere was wicked.
Yeah, so settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down in your local wherever, and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
He's back. Andrew, it's all been a bit weird. It's been a bit mystique-y. It's been a bit crazy. Some of it's played out on social media, but we're back. What's happened?
We are back. No, nothing's happened, Jim, as you know, and we're good mates. It's been funny, actually, hasn't it? Obviously, I went away to Dubai for 2 weeks with the family, and I wanted 2 weeks of a detox, a rugby and a work detox. So my FX job, anything to do with rugby. I just had 2 weeks off with the kids in Dubai and 30 degrees of heat. And then, as we all saw on social media and everything, oh, my rain. I have never seen rain like it in Dubai. So 2 weeks turned into three because we got delayed there and had to stay for another 5 days. So I missed three podcasts on the spin. And then I was coming back last week. I was coming back hard. I was ready to go after things because you've just been too nice, Jim, sitting on fences left, right and centre and on the podcast over the last few weeks. And then I got a chest infection. So
no, you got the shits. Be honest, you had the sushi shits.
I didn't have the sushi shits. No, you never get the shits from Nobu. But yeah, I had a chest infection, which I'm pretty much just about over now. So I'm back, Jim. I'm back for, you know, hopefully a massive run in for the rest of the season. We saw some mega games this weekend, but it's good to be back. Did you miss me?
Yes, we did. And what did you make of the podcast while you were gone? Because I know you posted the three messages you got saying that you were missed.
You said, mate, honestly,
what did you think?
Honestly, you say three. I had about 3,000 messages. So massive thanks to everyone that sent me messages. I was all right. People were like, have you and Jim fallen out? Why is Jim doing the pod without you? What is happening? When are you back for some honest calls? When's TMO Goody back in the house? But I appreciate all the messages. What do I think to that? I didn't even fucking listen, Jim. I had a detox.
Oh, of course, sorry. So you don't know if it was good or bad then?
No, I don't. And what I know is, obviously, you've held the fort with Rob. Biggs has come in and done a good job. And last week, I've seen a lot of last week when I was supposed to be there in studio with Eben Etzebeth, Vincent Cock, Mel Cock, and Biggs. And I've never seen anyone climb so far up someone's arse as you have, Evan Etzebeth.
Which bit?
Well, just all of it, mate. You went from, do you remember?
No, you have to be specific.
I'll be specific then. We've been doing this podcast 8 years. And for the first 6 years, you were like, I used to fill Evan in, like, no one's hard as me. Evan's all, he's blow bags. He's got massive arms, but he ain't got anything in him. Then
that was me, Andrew. That was 7 years ago when I was in my prime. I'm 41 now. Did you see the fucking size of him?
Yeah, I did. And then a few interviews, you know, obviously you've done your big gym show. He's been on it and the World Cup love and all that stuff. And now your best friends, Eben, you're the greatest second row I've ever seen. They are the biggest arms I've ever seen on a rugby player in my life.
I've been taking a bit of stick actually as well. Like a few people sending me messages, but you don't document all the glory. You don't document all the bad. It is what it is, isn't it? I'm holding the fort. I'm trying my very best, Andrew.
You
do
well,
know what I mean? Trying to put out the best products out there.
Yeah.
And it was great to have them in the studio. You know what I mean? I don't think they're overly happy. They had to drive an hour and a half over town, but we did miss you, Andrew. And I did drop you a couple of voice notes, didn't you? I said, and I know you're ill, so you didn't reply to the one because it was the day of the podcast we were recording, because there were some big decisions that went amiss, Andrew. And I was looking for my partner in crime, TMO Andrew, to put me right, because I am all love and rainbows, and that is life now. You know, what is life now without a rainbow? You know, it defines all our lives. But it's been a crazy few weeks. It's been a lot happening, and we've missed your honest input. So I was going to have a list of questions where I was going to ask you, like, to put me right. Like, basically, question one, did South Africa deserve to win the World Cup? Question two, have you seen Chasing the Sun? Question three, how good are South Africans? Question four, why didn't you come to the game on Friday, on Saturday to watch them? So that was all good, mate. Held the fort and business end of the season. And you're back.
I am back. Well, talking about South Africans, Jim, and talking about your love of South Africans, as I know, you've had a weekend in London, literally on your hands and knees, bowing down to every South African you can fucking find. And don't get me wrong, I love Saffers.
They were bowing down to me. They were bowing down to me.
I love Saffers. Tell me about your weekend. You've been down in London Friday, Saturday. I mean, I'm surprised you weren't on the pitch celebrating with a Sharks jersey on at the end as well, because that's
I got asked to go on. Jim, come down. I was like, fuck that, Marco. I ain't going anywhere near the pitch. So I left there quickly. Yeah, I was down. And Andrew, I'll give you the two words and you'll know how loose it got. Blowout.
Yeah.
Had a blowout. So I went down, no work, all pleasure. Had a lovely meal on Friday night with some good people there, actually. Good people who invest in rugby, good people who love the game. So it was a blowout. And then part of that was that I had to go and watch the game with them all on Saturday at the Stoop, which I kind of mentioned there. But, you know, Andrew, I know you don't do this, but I'm going to challenge you, and maybe we could do this towards the end of the season, go to a game as a fan. Now, I know that's a difficult thing.
I'm at games as fans all the time when I'm working.
No, Andrew.
I'm still a fan.
There you go. You see the pound coins and you're like, this is it. Whereas I'm like, actually, bringing back to the roots. Rob was going to come, couldn't get a babysitter. Basically,
his missus said no.
His missus said no.
No, she ain't going.
She's heard about a big gym blowout and she went, you're going nowhere near that.
That's fair enough. Andrew, let me ask you a question then quickly before we get going.
Yeah.
So Carl Dixon's incident in the Quinns Northampton match. I know it's old. Hang on, look, he's looking down at his notes. He's already. Okay, you call me out on all the ones then, because that one's been doing the rounds. I was chatting to Benny Kay about it at the airport. He was obviously saying that I was wrong on that. I'm fine. It didn't really bother me. Am I bothered? But there's a few this weekend that we will get into. But that one specifically, which was doing the rounds.
Well, it's ironic that Carl Dixon messaged me Sunday morning. So the game was the Saturday at Twickenham, wasn't it? And he's messaged me at 10:16 on the Sunday morning. As I know, TMO Goody will be out on the pod this week. Here is the reasons why I didn't give a yellow card. And off he went, gave this full explanation that we saw on BT Sport as well, didn't we? Listen, whether you think it's...
But hang on, just going back to that though, Andrew, that's nice that he's done that.
Yeah.
No one can look at that. Because I was messaging a couple of the referees as well, like back and forth, because they got a tough job, right? And there's loads going on. And I know that you tweeted about Andrew Brace after this game. Luke Pearce is getting stick for the Sharks Clermont game for some of the decisions.
Like, really?
Matthew Rainallen, we'll get onto it as well. Yeah, he was, yeah. There should have been a penalty try in that game. There's a yellow card for a Clermont player being taken out in the air. Like, there's loads going on, right? You get to these semi-finals and you get to these big games like that Quinns Northampton game was. And I actually think it's nice having our podcast and the referees listen that there is that interaction. Like, it's good, right or wrong. you know, like as in whether or not we have a difference in opinions, it is what it is. So firstly, that's nice that you messenger, and that's because it's all love and rainbows on the rugby pod for the last few weeks.
Well, I think he was trying to get his defence in first, and I appreciate that. And listen, I've got a massive amount of respect for refs, and they do have a tough job. But the whole Danny Kerr, Cole Dixon incident, the push is a yellow card itself. You know, and this debate around whether diving over the ruck, was it a ruck or was it a tackle? Was he trying to play the ball or play the man? All that stuff. When you look at it in the cold light of day, which a lot of us do in replays and have more time to digest it, it's a yellow card. What I don't want to say is that I think Danny Kerr is, and Danny Kerr's wife are godparents to Dicko's kid. I don't want to say that on our podcast. But
is that true?
There's some truth in that, yes, James. And that wouldn't have come into his mind at all. But the reality is, whether you think it's a yellow card for diving over the top to tackle Mitchell, it's a yellow card for the push. I think it was on Rahm. It's that long ago now that I can't remember who it was, but I think the push was on Rahm. It's a yellow card. But what I didn't like, and I did a column on it for Rugby Pass, was how Paul Hull, who's in charge of the RFU referees panel and all that stuff, they just came out and didn't even talk about the elephant in the room. He just said, no, I'm happy. This is the way he made these decisions and we are right as referees. And I think that was worse than just saying, just putting your hand up and admitting you're wrong sometimes, because we all have to admit we're wrong, don't we, Jim?
Let's keep it negative, Andrew, just for now, because there's loads of positive stuff to talk about. But Matthew Raynal,
good friend of mine, we message.
Have you messaged him after
I haven't,
Leinster, Northampton?
I haven't.
Mate, Leinster are crawling around the breakdown. Like, they're literally on their hands and knees around these breakdowns. Like, mental. And I don't like calling them out. I'm not. And I was going to be very careful. I know it's doing the rounds, the last breakdown of the game, which was actually all right. But Matthew Raynal just plays the balls. Like, he's like, fuck it, it's me last year. Just do whatever you want. I know that you are, maybe not in life, but when it comes to rugby, you're a man of the law, you know, you're the man of the rules. Like, whereas I, as a player, never was, right? Yeah. So rogue, like the Danny Kerr incident and the Carl Dixon thing from the week before, like, I'm all for it. Like, I'm happy for it to let loose and go play. But there's so many decisions, isn't there? Like, we can freeze frame things from all these games at the weekend being like, you know, the Intermac tackle, for example, should that have been a red card, a yellow card? Jack Walker's one where he got yellow carded, like, should have that been a yellow card? He's basically cleared out DuPont. But the Leinster-Northampton game is very topical, because as we go into the final and Leinster got away with a lot, Matthew Raynal is refereeing, let them get away with a lot. Toulouse as well, the way that they operate around the breakdown. The breakdown is so hard to referee, but I understand fans' frustrations. Like, if you're Northampton, and there was a load, I could have picked out four or five where Matthew Raynal has made the wrong decision against Northampton, because Ireland do it in numbers, because it's chaos around that breakdown. But I almost don't want to, because it's like, well, what are you going to gain by that? Because a lot of the teams are doing that. Like, Toulouse was exactly the same. They were getting away with murder in large parts of that as well. So where do you want to go with that?
I mean, you've summed it up pretty well. First and foremost, Leinster were the better team. They could have been 30-0 up at half-time, right? Saints didn't come out the blocks. They made errors, uncharacteristic kind of handling errors that Leinster put pressure on them. So the first thing that Saints will look at is their own issues. You know, you look at the try that Lowe scores from the quick tap penalty. You know, just your body language in a semi-final, and it's Rahm on the wing, just kind of walking back by your own try line, facing in. You've got to be more reactive than that. So they'll look at themselves first and foremost, and the errors allowed Leinster entries into their red zone, and off the back of that, they get a couple of tries. And Saints should have been blown away. Leinster should have been so far ahead with how that first half went that we shouldn't even be talking about this. But Saints found it within themselves. Leinster took their foot off the gas a bit. Saints, you know, Sam Vesti picked his nose at halftime, ate it for the lads, went hard at them, and they all came out with a different energy. Courtney Laws was ridiculously good. Augustus was off the charts great at number eight as well. And they got themselves back into a position where it was 20 points to 17. And a lot of that was, like Jim said, the Leinster entries into the breakdown. Some of them are coming in from the stands at the angle, right? Not even straight behind the back foot. But you've got to credit Leinster as well, because they'd have done their homework, and you look at their coaching ticket with Leo, and you know as well as I do, Leo has been a details man all his life, hasn't he? You've now got Nienaber, you've got McBride as well, you've got a lot of experienced coaches there that would have spent, someone would have spent a lot of time analysing Matthew Raynal. And bearing in mind, we come from a Leicester background where we cheated like fuck, let's be honest. Every Leicester player was taught to cheat, and it's how much do you cheat? Well, the best two teams in Europe are Toulouse and Leinster. And so in calling out their angles at the breakdown, in understanding who's refereeing the game and what's happening and what you can get away with, you understand that these are the best teams at every facet of the game, whether that's getting away, that grey area around the breakdown of what's entry, what can you do, when are you off your feet, how many milliseconds can you slow the ball down illegally by before the referee penalises you. And you've got to understand, and it'll be quite interesting because we've now got Leinster and Toulouse in the final. So you're probably going to get English refs, right? Which will be, ironically, either, I hope it's Luke Pearce. He's up there with the best referees in the world right now. Carl Dixon's got a shout. Just good job Quins aren't playing in the final now. I think the Premiership referees referee it very differently to how the top 14 refs and the URC refs ref it. And you get away with more at the breakdowns in those two leagues. Hence, Leinster and Toulouse are probably getting away with more than us people that watch the Prem and are used to an English referee understand. So, and you've got to tip your slipper to them. If you're getting away with it, keep fucking doing it, lads. Even gamesmanship, like Tadhg Furlong holding his head again like he's been hit. Jameson Gibson-Park, worthy of a performance, trying to buy penalties left, right and centre. And it's like,
I don't like that. You know, like the pass when there's a player on the floor and getting up. Yeah. I've always, maybe because I got hit with the ball maybe about 33 times in my career.
Yeah.
Getting up. But I know what you mean, like everything and anything, they're there, aren't they? Like you say, gamesmanship or whatever, like they are on the edge, like it's chaos. Like anything, any small thing, there's just so in tuned. And you know what, this word's like probably not a great word, and maybe this is where the issue may lie. It's a ridiculous word to say, but desperate. Leinster look desperate to win this competition, and I don't know whether that's a good or bad thing or not.
Yeah,
and I know everyone's desperate to win it, but do you know what I mean? Like they are, and you saw that at the end, and you saw that in the last 20 minutes of that game against Northampton. Like, what is that desperation? We go back to the World Cup, and I know Irish fans, I love you, okay? You did love me until last week, but I do love you, and I'm a big fan of Leinster and the way in which they play. But maybe that's why Northampton did nearly come back, and that is why, like a Quins, for example, looked okay in parts against Toulouse, because you've got the two teams where there's a real expectation that they should win. Like, Leinster, really, the fact that they rested players in the lead-up to that game. I was asking Biggs, actually, whether or not that was a good thing, and he kind of thought that it was, but Leo mentioned it in the press conference that maybe having 2 weeks off in the lead-up to that game, Northampton are on the fucking grind every single week. You look at the profile of players, no disrespect to Northampton. Like, Leinster should be 20, 30 points better than Northampton if you went value to value on each player. And fair play for Northampton coming back. Just on that, you mentioned one of the players. Who's the number 8 for Northampton?
Augustus.
South African, my mate.
There we go.
He was wicked. He was actually really, really good. And that's what I mean. Like, watching the game, Goody, I thought it looked like it was going to be 40 points. There were 20 points to 3 up. Leinster, everything, like, they just looked on it. Northampton looked tired early on, but it shows you actually how good they are, and they've got to be favourites for the Prem now. The way they managed to stick in, and I know we'll talk about Saracens would maybe spook a Northampton, but just on that game, to be that close and 3 points in it at the end of the game, credit to Accrope Park, the emotion playing at that stadium, like, that was brought up in the lead-up, that was part of the story for them. It was spoken about after the game as well, the history that stadium's got. And I know Northampton didn't win the game, but, you know, Finn Smith, who's coming on the show, was wicked for 21 years old to put that performance in. But I'm looking at that and I'm like, having seen the Toulouse game and having seen, I'm going based right on one try, which was Hendy's try with the kick over.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, do Leinster have any vulnerabilities? And it might not matter against Toulouse because it's going to be a battle of the breakdown. It's going to be a close game. You've got the two best teams playing. But any team that plays against Leinster, like, where is there a crack? The short kicking game, maybe. And maybe that's just based on the one kick over where Andrew Porter kind of fumbles the ball. He's never been in that position before. The reason I'm looking for the cracks is because they look so unsung, so physical, so joined up. And I give that comparison to the All Blacks all them years ago, where the physicality around the breakdown, then they're getting away with murder because everyone's doing it and it's almost impossible to referee.
Yeah.
But that final is going to be epic. I know I'm jumping ahead, but fair play to Northampton to stick in 3 points they lost that game by.
Yeah, 100%. And you talk about, what is the crack? Is there a crack in Leinster? The biggest thing is their mental side of the game, I think. We've said it for years. What have they won in the last 10 years? In reality, they've won a couple of URCs. The last time they won the Champions Cup was 2018, I think. But they've been in finals. They've been the nearly men. that there's like an expectation that they should win. So is their biggest weakness the mental side of it? And I love Dublin, I love Leinster, I love Ireland, I love my Guinness and my blackcurrant. But let's be honest, quarter final of the World Cup, a lot of these Leinster players, they lost the last two finals to La Rochelle, especially the home final. And they do say it takes, you know, you have to lose a couple to win one. But this Toulouse team as well, coming up against them, that's going to be an epic final that we'll get into a bit later on and over the next few weeks. But yeah, shout out to Saints. For Leinster, Caelan Doris, Miel Doris, Al Ghubezi, James Lowe, first person to ever score a hat-trick in a semi-final. And I know a couple of them were just catch it and put it downs, but proper top-tier players, aren't they? Jameson Gibson-Park, I cannot wait to see probably the two best nines in the world go up against each other. Jameson Gibson-Park up against...
Definitely the best two nines.
Dupont was off the charts good again today. He's just an absolute cheat code. But, you know, for that final, it's going to be epic, mouth-watering. I'll be there with my EPCR ambassador role, drinking Heineken.
Are you going to be wearing a polo shirt?
Yeah, mate, I'll squeeze into one. Fuck you.
You are fully on brand. Oh, yeah. Last year, you walked the Champions Cup out, didn't you? About 33 stone of you.
I did, yeah.
Turning point, wasn't it? That was the shift.
That was the moment. That was the moment when...
You need to do it again. It's almost like you died and then you're reborn. Like, you should do that again.
Well, ask them to take the trophy out.
Yeah, see if you can take it out and just see, like, the comparison, you know, through the ages.
Yeah, I think there'll be a bigger legend this year doing it. But I loved it last year in Dublin. Had an amazing weekend. And I shall be at Tottenham Stadium for the two games on the Friday and the Saturday.
I'm there as well.
Me and Jim are there. Let's have a load of beers. Come on, join us.
I'm part of the panel, Andrew. I don't know how.
I know you are.
Yeah, go on then, you tell what what is the panel? I see my emails, apparently. I don't read emails, as you know.
Well, it's called EPOTY, isn't it? European Player of the Year. EPOT.
EPOT, that's what it is. I had no idea that's what the abbreviation stood for. Thank you. So I'm choosing.
Yeah, I did it last year on the panel, and you do it on the Saturday morning. Now, bearing in mind, I'd been out on the Friday night in Dublin with Bastereau, with Sergio Parise, with Biggs, with a load of the referees. I got in at about 6 in the morning, and we had a breakfast meeting at 9 o'clock, and I couldn't see my nose. And I'm just like, whoever wins it, give it to whoever wins. But no, I didn't. I took it very seriously, and I basically said if Caelan Doris will win it, if Leinster win it, and if La Rochelle win it, Gregory Aldreet wins it. So you have a meeting, you have a breakfast, Jim, on the Saturday morning where you discuss all the nominees. And I added very little except for hell of a night, lads. That's all I kept saying.
So don't get blasted.
Yeah.
Rob, who's up for it this year? Who have I got to choose from?
Caelan Doris. You got Dupont, Jameson Gibson-Park, Courtney Laws, James Law, Dan Sheehan, Finn Smith and Marcus Smith.
There you go.
It's actually, lads, as well. It's actually called the Investec Player of the Year.
There we go. Of course it is. Hey, on brand.
Thanks for that, Rob.
Who would you go for, Rob?
I think James Law, you know.
That's a good shout.
Just because I like his hair.
No, you can't say just because you like his hair. In fact, if I'll do that, as in I'm going to pick James Lowe because producer Rob likes his hair.
There you are.
And that's the reasoning.
That's the reasoning, of course.
Mate, if you've had 40 pints, then you're allowed to say that, yeah.
Yeah, I'll go between the two nines, I think. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll go two nines because I reckon they're, like you referenced there, the best two nines in the world. And they've now changed the look of what a scrum half should be. Involved in absolutely everything. So they're both massive. I understand James obviously scored a hat-trick at the weekend. Like, I get that. I can see why you'd go for him. But the influences that Dupont, as he did at the weekend, scoring two tries.
He was very good in the quarterfinal as well against La Rochelle, wasn't he? James Lowe.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You've got to go back through the archives. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, I've got such a short memory. Like, you know what I mean? Andrew, who are you going for?
The top three have got to be James Lowe, Dupont and Jameson Gibson-Park. Not in that order, ladies and gentlemen. That's just the top three. And then basically you give it to whoever's had the best game in the final and whoever wins it. Because normally it goes to the player on the winning team.
I reckon this as well, and I'm calling everyone out, including myself, who's picked these, is very superficial. I bet if you dug really into the stats and the details, for example, Paul Costas for Toulouse, no one's really speaking about. And then you look at the influence that he has on the game. Blair Kinghorn for Toulouse as well, kicking.
Mate, how good's he?
But this is what I mean. As in, I reckon if you looked at all the games, the influences, meters made, and maybe that's my fucking job.
This is your job, James.
Maybe I should have done it properly.
Hold on, Jim. I did it last year, and you get sent stat sheets after every round. Open your fucking email, son.
I've not had one stat sheet, I can promise you. And you said that you did it and you couldn't even see past your nose. So
true.
Us involved in there. And the list has already been set. So that is like an overall list. I don't know who's inputted. I've inputted, but that's the only list I've got to choose from. But I reckon if you went Moneyball on it and deep into the archives, there'd be some people that you're not talking about at all. So basically, Blair Kinghorn, you've got it.
What do you think of Ross Byrne, Goody? Because he missed a few, didn't he? With the boot.
That's harsh, Rob.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, Rob. Straight in. Yeah, he did. And, mate, listen, I feel for him because still the whole thing around Johnny Sexton, you know, we've seen with the Ireland team now, Crowley's got the gig. And, you know, he's always looked upon as the guy that's just playing because Johnny didn't play when Johnny was fit. And now he's the guy that's taken over. Is there a weak link? Possibly him. When Jim was talking earlier, and I don't mean that nastily, I'm just talking about the level of player that's in that team. You know, the forward pack are immense, aren't they? All of them. They haven't even got James Ryan playing. When you talk about second rows, Maloney was class as well, wasn't he? Off to Bath, that lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he's off to Bath, yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, because they've signed Snyman for next year. But yeah, I mean, Byrne, it wasn't his best game, especially off the tee, but he's in that system and he knows how to get the best out of players. And I think Toulouse will definitely go after him. And, you know, when you're talking about analysing the final, Peter Aki in the centres will definitely be hoeing down.
Again, another player who never gets spoken about. Awesome.
Mate, he's ridiculously good. So yeah, I wasn't Byrne's greatest day, but, you know, he'll be expected to have a big performance. And goal kicking may be crucial. Like, you talked about Blair Kinghorn, Jim. When I saw the teams, Thomas Ramos is the best goal kicker in the world, without a shadow of a doubt, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When I saw the teams and Blair Kinghorn starting ahead of him, that was a signal of intent. And we've seen Blair Kinghorn. He's a good kicker, but he's not Thomas Ramos level. So I just wonder, in that final, does Blair Kinghorn play on the wing and Ramos start at fullback, and then do Toulouse have a bigger edge over Leinster with the goal kicking, because Ramos is off the charts good and it's not a massive strength of Byrne's game in terms of that top level.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but did Thomas Ramos look a bit pissed off when he came on?
Yeah.
I know he had that interaction with Marla.
He got slapped on the back of the head, didn't he? Marla threw the game away for the quiz.
And called an effing bitch as well. Did you read his lips, Marla's lips after?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on, brother? But yeah, but like, imagine, like, that's a massive call for them to drop Thomas Ramos. I was shocked. And I did wonder where Blair Kinghorn would fit in. But again, like, you look at how well he's played. And
he's brilliant.
Just how star-studded. Who are the better team, Andrew? If you could own one, if you could be like, own the 223s, who would you own?
I'd own Toulouse. I'll be honest, you know me and the French. I want Leinster to win. And I'll say it on here now. I want Leinster to win. And that might not go down too well with some people because, you know, of how Leinster have handled themselves or whatever. And they just, you know, they've signed Barrett, they've signed Snyman, and everyone's a little bit pissed off with it probably. But I want Leinster to win. I love the Leinster lads. I love Leo Cullen, love Sean O'Brien. You know, we love going to Dublin, all that stuff. And it's time for them to win it. But looking at how Toulouse can play and did play, the Jack Willis side of it, you know, I've got a soft spot for Jack Willis. Thibaut Flamont as well, Wasp boy, ex-Wasp boy, came through. He's like Loughborough University 15 fly half at one point. Now look at him, like offloading for fun and a proper baller. But I think Toulouse, they'll remember that Leinster spanked them. Was it last year in the semi-final as well? So they'll have that pain still inside them. I just think with the quality they've got, their backline, their offloading game, the way they read each other, ball out the tackle, you know, it's electric at times. Dupont's the man, Untermack. Yeah, I love Aki in the centres. Obviously, Kinghorn at fullback. Cost in the centres, you know, I think he's class. Young kid, he looks like, remember Phil Christophers? I see a bit of the Phil Christophers in him, the lid, the step.
Yeah.
Good player. I love Juan Cruz Malia as well on the wing. You know, they are class. And then you go into the forward pack. Mirfu, the size of him. And he could have had a yellow card.
Oh, my Mofo.
Yeah. He could have had a yellow card, but size of the bloke.
But that's what I mean, Andrew. On like the size, and I know that they've got over that barrier now by beating La Rochelle, but guys like Mofo, fucking Pito Malvaca, he's wicked. I think he's one of the best hookers in the world. Well, he is one of them. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to say. He plays for France and obviously Toulouse as well. Yeah. But that is the big thing, isn't it? Around the breakdown, the way that Anton Dupont challenges around there, it's very different. It's very different, isn't it? And that's going to be the big thing around that final. But yeah.
It's going to be mouthwatering.
What did you think of Jack Walker's yellow card, lads? Because I'm thinking, what else is he supposed to do in that situation?
Love and rainbows, mate. Love and rainbows. Go in with your hands. It's hard, isn't it? Because if you go based on how Leinster were entering the breakdown, just base it on that, with that kind of violence and physicality, It's Antoine Dupont. Yes, he's a scrum half, but he's very good over ball. The way that it happened, like, came off a turnover as well. So you instantaneously, and Sam Warburton talked about it, so I'll probably sound like I'm repeating exactly what he said, but, well, I am, because he's one of the best in the business. But you get the turnover, that kind of speed, the physicality, the desperation to get into the breakdown and clear. I don't really know what you can do. In hindsight, you obviously don't go in as hard, do you? Because it looked reckless. And I love the way that Warburton spoke about it, a rugby incident. But a yellow card's a yellow card in the context.
I find it difficult, right? Because what it's going to do now, and if a coach is chatting to players, a coach is going to say, get your head up. And they spoke about it in studio, didn't they? Get your head up in a rock to see what's coming. And that's just going to encourage people to get blasted in the face, right? So I think it's a really unfortunate rugby incident. You know, we saw the one where Genji came in against Ireland and Tadhg Furlong's done like a massive dive out the back and then...
grenade.
Yeah, held his face and all that. It's going to encourage that, right? They got it slightly wrong in studio because Andy Brace had given a penalty against Quinns. I think it was for Esterhazen, but people were like, oh, it looked like a really good turnover from, I think it was Don Brandt. He'd signalled a penalty to Toulouse against Quinns for hands on the floor, I think, in the breakdown. Now, it's really unlucky. I think it's a rugby incident. What I didn't like was, I think the TMO, and I couldn't fully hear it because there was a load of noise and commentators were talking as well, but the assistant referees were trying to push Bracey down a red card route. I'm like, you're fucking joking, aren't you? And fair play to Andy Brace. He was like, no, I see this as a yellow, Max. And that's probably because there's a bit of head contact. It's Dupont, it's in Toulouse.
And it got showed 420 times on the big screen.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't replay Untermax attack on Esterhazen. They didn't replay it once.
Mental.
No, c'est pas possible, cannot find it.
C'est pas possible.
I mean, that's French directors for you, right? TV directors, absolutely shocking. Well, Jim, you asked me who I want to be in charge of and who I'm backing for the final. And I said, I want Leinster to win, but I think to lose. What about you, big man? Who's got the most Springboks, basically? You're picking them, yeah?
Well, Jock Nienaber's at Leinster, so I'm going to go with them. And I feel as if I need to build the bridges with the Irish again after last week. So I'm going to say Leinster. But I'm not just saying that for that reason. It's going to be close, without doubt. Around the breakdown, it's going to come down to the inches. And who referees, whether or not it's Luke Pearce or Carl Dixon, whoever, that's going to play a big part of it. Well matched, but I just feel... Leinster, depending on how Ross Byrne plays as well, is Gary Ringrose could be back, hearing that he's going to be back as well.
Yeah,
I'm going to say Leinster, but it's going to be close by two or three.
There you go, my man.
Rob, have I built the bridge?
Yeah, I think we've probably made some friends again now. Should we destroy that friendship again? Should we discuss the elephant in the room about Eben's comments? Do you want to go there?
Andrew, you must have seen this. Go on, you saw this bit. It's doing the rounds on social media. It's been all over the news. It's been on Off the Ball. It's been on newspapers in New Zealand. Go on, Rob. Where else is it?
It's had about 7 million views. It's ridiculous. Blown up.
Tell me about it. Was he surprised by what he thought he heard? Because I'm going to call him out. I call bullshit. No. I call bullshit. You ain't counting to 12 or 13 straight after a game, son.
So basically, Andrew, let me just set the scene because a lot of Irish people are coming at me and hating me. Like, I'm a bothered either way. Like, I love the Irish, I love the South African, I love rainbows, right? So basically, after the game, when I'm pitch side, hugging all the Springboks and stuff like that, see ya, Eben, come to me, RG, come over, Ratty, I'm begging you, where's your bulldog? So Eben, after the game, losing against Ireland after he got picked up by James Lowe and Zombie was banging out. We went around the houses on that before. He came up to me and said that we'll get them back if they make it, right? So that kind of cold line where I had shivers and was basically like,
oh, Eben, ah. Oh.
Right, so that's where that came from. So I asked him the question last week and then he wanted to talk about it and basically said that he found it weird that straight after the game, and I've got an idea on this as well, and I didn't say it in the podcast because I was listening.
I've got an idea.
I didn't want to say. But I'll explain. But on the podcast, he's saying that straight after the game, specifically 12 of them came up to him and said, like, we'll see you in the final.
Yeah.
And I think he's taking it as if, like, there's an arrogance around them.
Nah.
Whereas we know that that probably isn't the case. They're saying it like, bad luck. We respect you and we'll probably see you in the final, or we hope to see you in the final again.
That's the word. I reckon if anyone said it, they'd have said, hopefully see you in the final. Meaning, we know we're both going our separate paths now and there's no way Eben can count to 12 shaking people's hands. You've been in that situation where you're absolutely blitzed. No one knows what's going on. You've just lost a game. Your emotions are everywhere. You ain't going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Caelan Doris, that's the sixth person to say it. It's not happening, is it? So what I think they'd probably said is hopefully see you at the final or whatever, because, you know, the Irish are good people. There's not a fucking chance that they've all gone there and it's been interpreted the way it has or the way it's in Evan's head. What it does do, though, is it builds an amazing narrative for the summer series, doesn't it? And I'm saying we should fucking fly out there.
But yeah, you're right, but it does, and maybe that's intentional.
I'll put an Irish jersey on, you put Evan's number 4 Springbok jersey on, and let's have it out there in South Africa.
But you know the crack, Andrew. The Irish lads aren't allowed to come and speak to us, whereas the South African lads, basically, if I said to Evan, can you give me a piggyback round the pitch, he would be like, get on my shoulders. You know what I mean? I'm carrying you around. But it did, it blew up, and it was quite funny watching Alan Quinlan and the great Ronan O'Gara interact with it, because they were taken aback by it, but... Where I see it is it got lost in translation. Like, that's it. Like, they're very different, aren't they? South Africans, especially the Afrikaans boys. And everything, I suppose, is like around that straight after the game, they have this kind of diehard humility.
Yeah.
So that's where it got lost in translation. But you're absolutely right. It fucking builds the narrative.
It does.
For the summer tour. But I will just finish with this. Like, do you not love that, though?
I love it. Yeah, I do.
So people are like coming at me and they're negative about it. I was like, this is what we need.
Yeah.
Like Rob mentioned, millions of views. They're talking about it in different, like talking about it in New Zealand, in the media there. This is good. This is good for the game. Great. It's been lost in translation. Yes, they're pissed off. Bundiaki's stealing chicken wings from people in Wellington. And, you know, he's not Irish and all this bollocks. And Peter Romani, the gardener as well, is like rinsing people. This is good.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah. Billy Vunipola getting tasered by
no,
police
not good.
Guys.
Not good.
This is good.
Not good. Have you watched the video of that?
I have.
All I'm saying is Marco Riccioni is stood against the wall not knowing what the fuck to do. He's got his head in his hands thinking, Billy, you're fucked, mate. Billy, you are fucked and there's nothing I can do. Most things are great for the game. Not that one, Billy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Right, Andrew, we tried to get another South African in, but we dampened it down a little bit. But we thought we'd bring in a young man who has steered Northampton Saints unbelievably this year. You're a big fan of him. I'm a big fan of him. He's only 21. It's the great, the lovely Finn Smith. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Just been chilling all day, really. What are you lads up to? All good?
All good. You weren't training today, were you?
No, we had the day off. We flew back yesterday quite late, which is perfect there because we got stuck into Dublin a bit, so yeah, it gives a bit of time, and then we're just chilling today and short week before Gloucester on Saturday.
Nice.
So Finn, you said that you were rolling around Dublin. Let's just start with a positive. Out of a place, right?
Yeah, it's a cool city. There was lots going on. We had a good spot booked, and win or lose, that was always the plan. So yeah, you got to go out and celebrate sometimes. Unfortunately, it wasn't as good as if we got the win, but we still had a good go of it.
What was the good spot booked? Because I've got a lot of history in Dublin. I know all the good spots. Was it House?
Place called House, yeah. That
there
was
you go, there you go, exactly.
Things
I know.
Never change, yeah.
I know the good spots, mate. Out the back, great bar out the back, isn't there?
Hey, I love this. Goody's nearly 50, Finn's 21. They go to the same joints.
And how hard do you go? Because I'm getting missed calls from James Wootton. Big shout out to Wootton, who's head of commercial at Northampton Saints, at like half 2 in the morning. Like, missed FaceTime calls, the lot. So I take it you all went pretty hard, right?
Yeah, it was good. We were 4 or 5 a.m. rolling back in. So,
there you go. To hear it.
There you go. Good boys.
Yeah. Love to hear it. Well, let's just chat like about the emotions after. And we were talking about and loads of stuff on social media. Is there a part, Finn, as a young man? Yes, you're going to say missed opportunity, could have, should have, would have. Do you come off that thinking, fucking hell, if only like there was a few decisions that go the other way, the breakdown, right? Let me just give us an idea of what the lads are saying about the breakdown. We know what it's like. We've been in changing rooms before. Are the lads speaking about it, that it was like the Leinster lads crawling around on their hands and knees or not?
Yeah, I think the word chaos was thrown around a bit. There was no finger pointing about what they were doing and what we weren't, but it was chaos. It always is in Europe, and I think they pushed the boundaries well, and we probably didn't do that as much. But yeah, fair play to them. They were bloody good, and we didn't put our best stuff out there. So it was a real disappointed change room afterwards, in all honesty, because as good as they were, we felt like we maybe didn't give them our best, and we could have, on another day, had a better go at it. But what can you do?
You're not the first person to say chaos. We've spoken about it on here. Just give us an idea of what chaos means from your point of view. What does that mean as a player playing at the minute and just played against Leinster?
they were just throwing everything into every breakdown, whether they were jackling, then letting it wait a few seconds and throwing a couple of bodies into it. I think it's always ref slightly different in Europe. You're allowed a little bit more around maybe just having a nibble with your with your hands on the floor a little bit, or
he's so polite. He's so polite.
If you're hitting someone and going off your feet, if you hit the person first, then you get away with it a bit more. But that's just something we didn't adapt to very well, and they were bob on it, to be fair. So yeah, that's all I say on that.
Yeah, and to be fair, I don't know whether you've watched it back yet, but you put some really good stuff together in the second half. You're slightly off in that first half. Is that a credit to Leinster, or was it more just individual errors from you guys, maybe the pressure of the occasion, something like that? Or was it actually Leinster really putting you guys under some serious heat that perhaps you're not used to at the minute in the Prem?
Yeah, I think it's both. Credit to them and what they were doing to us. They had probably more line speed than we were used to facing usually. Like I said about the breakdown, the ball was taking a few more seconds to come out of that. It was bobbling around. And then also, I think it showed that we maybe haven't played in too many of those big games. I thought we took about 20, 25 minutes to really catch up to the intensity of it, not just physically, but we're probably a lot less mentally sharp than them early on. We're just doing some stupid stuff we never usually do, like chucking offloads, and I chucked an intercept. We were being a bit sloppy on our own line, things like that. And I think when you maybe have a bit more time in the Prem and get away with stuff like that, I thought against the top side like that, they really punished us for it. So yeah, a bit of both, like you say, but yeah, we weren't, definitely took us a little while to warm into it.
What about the physicality?
Yeah, it was good. It was proper, as much as high intensity as we played all year. Like, we love playing at speed, they did as well, and I think you look over the clock after about 30 minutes and you're a bit like, shit, like, we've got another it was a proper game, and they were whacking us, we were whacking them, and it was good to be a part of. Yeah,
you talk about whacking them, mate. You made 18 tackles, second only to Courtney Lord, so that's a hell of a shift.
How good was he?
Oh mate, he's ridiculous. He's about 46, but he's still going strong. He'll get a bit of a rest in Pro D Dur next year, counting his Euros for Brive, but mate, he's performed ridiculously well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's so good. And I think that was why it was even more gutting afterwards. Like, he's leaving the club in such a good spot and playing as well as he is, and we couldn't quite do it for him. But yeah, genuinely, I think it wouldn't be out there outrageous to say he's the best, if not just close second after Dupont in the most players in the world this season. Like, he's been that good for us. So
he certainly has. But the physicality I was talking about, you making 18 tackles. Now, I know you've been involved with England over the Six Nations. That's got to be the most intense game you've ever played in, right?
Yeah.
How close is that to international level from what the guys have sort of said and lived and breathed it?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I've not had a great deal of exposure to it, but chatting to the other lads, that was like international rugby level. I mean, they've got however many Irish players. We've got a lot of boys in and around the England squad, and I think that was two proper teams. By all accounts, that was a Six Nations World Cup kind of level. So, yeah, it was good.
And I know it was 15-3 going in at halftime. I know the quick tap and stuff, you'll probably be kicking yourself a little bit. But what did Lee Radford say at halftime? We had him on the podcast as well. I don't imagine he mixes his words. But defence has been the heartbeat of what you've built your season on.
Yeah, we were pretty proud of our defensive performance in the first half, to be fair. Like, we felt that they threw pretty much everything they had at us, and actually, bar the tap, like you say, and one good score they had, we felt like we'd sort of dealt with it, and actually took a lot of confidence out of that, that although we hadn't felt much in that first half, if we could just start putting a bit of our attack on them, then actually there wasn't a huge deal between the two of us. So yeah, he was pretty positive, to be fair, and pretty calm, which he's been great at all year. So it wasn't too frantic in the change room, despite how sort of bad we were for that first 40, yeah.
And who was leading the messages then? Because they interviewed Sam Vesti, who obviously Jim and I know very well, and you're building an amazing relationship with him as well, I presume. And he seemed really calm, which is great. When your coaches are calm, that shows onto the players as well. Who's leading all the messaging at halftime? Because you're obviously a senior player there now in the fulcrum position of fly half. You've got to be talking about the attack a lot. Who were the big shot leaders that were speaking and laying down the messages?
Yeah, Dal spoke a bit. I said a little bit. And the main one was Courtney. Courtney, like you say, he sort of pulled us in and said, like, lads, I don't know if you've realised it, like, these lot aren't way better than us. Like we maybe built up in our heads for a little bit, actually. Like, he was sort of like, look, we can properly go out and win this, like, regardless of the score. They're going to find it difficult to live with us. And to be fair, they came out, and I thought that score they got just after halftime was probably the killer blow. I think if we'd have got a good try just after halftime, then maybe it would be a different story. But I thought we just left ourselves a little bit too much of a mountain to climb.
First, it's awesome to have you on the podcast, Finn, as a young man who's in the system. You know what I mean? Like, as in, a lot of lads are not keen for it. And it's great that you are. Like, mate, we're big fans of you, as you know. And I think it's really cool how you've just said that you, you're comfortable chatting at halftime and giving key messages. As a young 21-year-old, you don't always get that, do you? If you've got Courtney, you've got Lewis, you've got experienced guys in that changing room, but you're the fly half, right? So do you take the reins? Do you take the quarterback kind of reins that you're running the show?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's part of the job as a 10. Goody, you all know, like you have to know the game and understand the game as well as, if not better than anyone else in the team. And sort of for me not to be sharing what I was feeling and I was thinking, I think would not be the right thing to do, actually, because I like to think that I've got a fairly good understanding compared to a lot of the lads on it. So, yeah, you've got to drive that. And I think if you go in there scared of doing it and all of these things, then you just don't have the respect of the group. And ultimately, you're the one making a load of huge decisions. So, yeah, there's never been a sort of hesitancy to speak or anything like that, like you say, Jim.
Yeah, it seems like a great environment. Talk to us about the Bogey Monster then, Sam Vesti. We love him on here. Old Red Nuts. He's got so many nicknames that we perhaps can't talk about. But he's a great bloke and one of probably the best coaches in England at the minute in terms of his vision, his understanding. How's your relationship building with him and how good a coach is he? Because he's learned a lot from Pat Howard at Leicester and he's changed that with how the game's changed. But I'm super impressed with him every time I hear him speak and speak to people around the game about him. And he's going to go into big things, isn't he, Sam?
Yeah, he's good. Everyone takes a piss out of me. He's my dad, but he's genuinely like, he's the best rugby coach I've come across. I think it's a real skill in understanding it to the level that he does and then being able to portray it to a group so simply. And actually, he's helped me so much. We spend a lot of time just discussing little bits and it's always back yourself, see space, go for space. And I think actually a lot of coaches will say that, like, we'll always back you, always do this, but not actually live it. You know what it's like? You say, oh, we'll back you, and then you do a shit pass or a shit kick, and they come screaming at you. And actually,
yeah,
he's one of the few that really lives that and will always support you if he thinks you're doing the right thing and trying the right stuff. So, yeah, he's been a massive part of everything we've done this season and always challenging us to get better. And we'd be nowhere near as good a side if we didn't have him, to be honest. Like, he's a proper coach and yeah, we're lucky to have him.
And that's why they say he's your dad, right?
I tell you what, though, you joke about that, Finn. He's got a son who's about 38, so...
Actually,
yeah, he does.
His son is as old as you, Finn, isn't he? Genuine.
I actually saw him out at a nightclub the other night, and I was thinking, how on earth are you in here?
Yeah, he fathered young. That's all I know. He is a good lad. Finn, right, so the lay of the land with all the fly halves, Owen, George, Marcus, and all the ones all over the world. Who do you take inspiration off? Who's taking you under the wing or who's leading the charge in your mind?
Yeah, good question. I think Finn Russell is always someone I've looked at and taken a lot of learnings off. I think a lot of, obviously, his highlights, real stuff's great, but I actually think there's a lot of the little game management things he does and the tactical kicking and things like that he's probably the best in the world at. I think, obviously, the two English guys, George and Marcus at the moment, have been great and I've learnt loads off them. And the other one that I say that I watch a lot of is Richie Mwonga. I think he's a real athlete and yeah, can do everything, to be honest. So there's a load of good tens out there at the moment, but they're some of the ones that I sort of look up to a lot, yeah.
Let's talk about the Six Nations then, because obviously you're involved throughout the tournament and we saw a seismic change in how Steve's team, your team, the England team, played from the first three games to that Ireland test when we expanded our game a lot. We took the game to Ireland and it was an amazing victory. What was the difference? What was the change? And you look back at the Italy game, the Scotland game, the Wales game. They were drab affairs, if we're being honest, as an England fan. But there was something that changed with a real attacking mindset that we haven't seen from a Steve Borthwick coach team. Was that player-led? Was it Steve-led? And how did it all come about?
Yeah, to be fair, it was Steve-led. I think it was after the Scotland game and we'd been driving a lot of messages around our kick game and our defence and stuff. And I think we attacked really poorly in that game. And I think actually after that, Steve stood up and he said, look, let's just have a real big focus on our attack these next couple of weeks. Like he said, we're one of the best defensive side in the world. We've got great kicking game. If we can just nail home this attack, we're going to be a really tough team to beat. And actually those 2 weeks we had before Ireland was 90% just talking about our attack, speed of ball, all of these things. And actually it felt like that was a real turning point where a lot of the leaders in the team took the pressure off us a lot. And there was a real license to sort of see space and play quickly and really go and try and beat teams with our attack. And I think the shift in mindset from Scotland to Ireland, like, as you say, there was a real night and day change. And I thought we were playing some brilliant rugby those last 2 weeks against Ireland and France and set us in really good stead for what's to come in the summer.
Finn, how hard is that? right, with the pressure from the outside with to attack and score tries and play this great brand of rugby. You look at your game against Harlequins, and then you look at the Saris Bath game where it was just kicks of balls. And Saracens have that blueprint, right? How difficult is it not to get into that style of rugby and stick to what you want to do, knowing that actually you might need to kick and play a boring brand of rugby in order to win?
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? And I think ultimately you want to win games, and I think there's ways of doing it. And I think the main thing is having all of the guys on the pitch wanting to do the same thing and seeing the same stuff. So like you said, at Northampton, we speak a lot about moving the point of contact and trying to make defenders make decisions, and we can make good decisions off the back of that. And actually, whether that's right or wrong, like, I think it's up to some of the individuals in the squad, to be honest, and how hard you all put your eggs into the basket. And I think actually, like, you can see the amount of success that your Saris and Leicesters have had doing it other ways. So I think there's different ways of seeing it and different ways of coaching it. And actually, it almost doesn't matter which one you think's right, as long as you've got everyone all in on it and going hard at it. So that's sort of my view on it, yeah.
Next season, we're jumping the gun a little bit here, but three of the big leaders are leaving. Hopefully I've not missed anyone out, but Alex is obviously gone, Courtney and Lewis as well.
Yep.
Who's going to step up captaincy-wise? Has there been talk around that? Or
yeah, no, there's not. I think Ferbs would probably be the obvious one. He's captained a lot of games this year, so I think he's probably front runner. Dingers has got a big voice in the squad as well, so I'd be surprised if it wasn't that one of those two, but never know. So yeah, I'd imagine Ferbs, but there's a good young leadership group for us at the moment, sort of really working hard at that side of things. So hopefully the big void left by the guys you just mentioned won't feel too massive.
Finn, mate, you've been smashing it. When I say smashing it, like, you're smashing boys. You smashed Ryan Beard at the weekend. And I think your point of difference is around that tackling, mate. Fucking smoking boys and being 21 years old. And it's been awesome to see you as a young man carving up, mate.
Cheers, mate.
The boys flying.
I tune in every so often, so yeah.
Oh, every so every often. Week, he mate. Nearly said every week. He nearly said.
He meant every week.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Cheers, Finn.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Jedi are being murdered.
On June 4th, Star Wars returns, only on Disney Plus.
I didn't do it, believe me.
She was my student. Let me be the one to bring her in.
Now she is a student of the dark side. An acolyte.
Star Wars, The Acolyte. 2-episode premiere June 4th, only on Disney Plus.
Top bloke.
Top lad.
Yeah, he is. He is. Love having him on, actually. Second time we've had him on. And, mate, how good has he been this year? And he's, for a young man, so level-headed and understands the game, speaks really well.
He was at Worcester, right?
Yeah, he was at Worcester.
I think we had this conversation before. Yeah, he was at Worcester, right? Yeah. So he's Bromsgrove or Warwick.
He was at Warwick I was a Bromsgrove boy. Dream signing for Saints. And like you talk about what's happened. And obviously he came in from Worcester on, and he wouldn't have come on that much money because of what happened at Worcester. And they realised how good he was and how they wanted to build the future of the club around the likes of him, the likes of Dingwall and a few others. And obviously Biggs was there on massive cash. He gets the opportunity to go to Toulon, as we all know about. Listen, amazing signing for Saints. Brilliant bloke, playing really well. And, you know, him and Marcus Smith are England's future at 10, and the future's bright for that.
Yeah, imagine being a Northampton fan, how happy. I know they didn't win at the weekend, but this brand of rugby they're playing.
Yeah, yeah.
There ain't many teams going to Croke Park and the emotion and the history at that stadium and running Leinster that close.
No.
So,
and
yeah,
also,
the fair play to them.
All the Saints fans now know, go to Bar Rumba, because apparently that's where the boys go karaoke.
I couldn't ever go to Northampton. They've got a karaoke bar and all you can eat Chinese. That's it. There's nothing else. Sounds like fucking hell on earth.
And rugby union. That's about
and
it.
And rugby. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Jim, should we talk about the Challenge Cup? Your boys, Gloucester?
Nah.
No. You don't want to talk
about
it?
No, we have to.
Yeah, we have to.
Freddie Clark, yeah. Let's talk about him if you want. Hell of a finish.
The old Ash Splash. I mean, he's had some impacts, hasn't he, this year? What about...
I'm a massive fan of him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, didn't we get him a new contract when he came on here?
We did, yes, the club hate us. But actually, this is an interesting thing that we should probably start on. Gloucester have won 14 out of 14 in the Cup.
In both the Premiership Rugby Cup and the Challenge Cup. They're a cup team, Jim. Fuck the league, they're a cup team.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But like, it is a bit negative, and I've got a lot of mates at Gloucester still, but we have to talk about it. Like, now you're here, Andrew. Very poor in the Premiership, Andrew. And it's like, you have to ask yourself, what do you want? Do you want the Challenge Cup and Prem Cup, or do you want the Prem? You know what I mean? And it's a horrible thing to say, because I know the season was gone early on for them. And I've got mates at Gloucester, and I love the club. But what does success look like? You know, winning the Challenge Cup, you're like, it's been a hell of a year. Or am I being harsh? Because 14 for 14
hold on.
Across Challenge Cup and Prem Cup is good.
Yeah. You said it yourself then, they had a load of injuries and some bad luck at the start of the season, right? So I remember when they were decimated, loads of boys were out injured and they were losing games pretty closely in the Prem, but losing them regularly. Two ways to qualify for the Champions Cup, right? Win the Challenge Cup or finish in the top eight in the Prem. And they ain't finishing the top eight at the Prem. And so the only way into the Champions Cup next season is by winning the Challenge Cup. And if you're a Gloucester fan, do you want to finish eighth or seventh and be nowhere near the top four? Or, and it's a hard question to answer, or do you want to have done what you've done this year, finish ninth in the Prem, but win the Premiership Cup and the Challenge Cup so you get into the Investec Champions Cup next year? Like, it's a tough one. Well,
that, when you put it like that, it's easier. Like, winning the double. Like, they've won the double effectively. I know it's not the Champions Cup, but if they win the Challenge Cup. But you're actually right. If you put it in that way, something to cheer about, the fact that they beat Leicester for the Prem Cup, and we know that Leicester went almost full noise for that game. Then they beat Leicester the week after that in the Prem. But you're right, actually putting it like that, giving the Gloucester fans something to cheer about and being at the Tottenham Stadium the night before on the Friday, you'd probably prefer that, to be honest, and the players to play at the Tottenham Stadium. So, fair play.
Mate, you want to play in finals. Like, I look back on my career, played in a load of finals, some of them shocking, some of them, you know, we walked away with trophies. But, like, you don't play, and I had years where, you know, you're battling to get in the Champions Cup qualification and the season ends, you've got nothing, no big game. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you've just, yeah, lads, we finished eighth, brilliant. We're in the Champions Cup next year, whatever it is, right? So it's a tough one. Yes, you want your league form to be way better, but I think this is a consequence of their misfortune at the start of the season, all the injuries they've had. They're now starting to get players back. You know, a lot of those games that they were just losing, weren't they? They weren't far off. You know, really inexperienced team at times. And I think it's brilliant for Skivs, and, you know, people earlier in the season were questioning him. Was he the right man to take him forward? Don Waldock, the coach as well. You know, they've made a few changes behind the scenes, but if they can get to the final, and I'm a Leicester fan, right? Work for the club. I don't want Gloucester to win this Challenge Cup, and I feel horrible saying that. But if they win the Challenge Cup, Leicester don't make the Champions Cup next season.
Yeah.
And so from my perspective...
Crazy when you think about it like that.
From my perspective, you talk about my old team. I used to play for the Sharks. I am going to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium with a Sharks jersey on, lads. And it's a double-edged sword. Sharks jersey because it's my old
team. Oh, look at Andrew. South Africa. Get me to South Africa. I love you.
And also because I need Leicester.
It's easy to follow.
In the Champions Cup next season. So a frustrating year for Gloucester fans, but some real green shoots. Zach Mercer was out for a long time. Look how fucking good he's been since he's come back from injury.
Unreal. Man of the match again.
Again, 16 carries, 5 defenders beaten, 4 offloads, 12 tackles. He's not just doing the star stuff that he does with the ball in hand. He's grafting without the ball as well. So he was out for a long time. Yeah, they had loads of injuries.
Adam Hastings.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they've made some brilliant signings for next year as well. Anscombe at 10. Thomas Williams, a worldie of a 9 coming for him next year. So, you know, there's a lot of positivity around Gloucester. I'm sorry, though, Gloucester fans. I just hope you don't win it because I need Leicester in the Champions Cup next season for the Andy Good suite to be full because it ain't filling up playing Georgia or the Black Lion or a Romanian team in the Challenge Cup. So there we go. But should we talk about Freddie Clark's try?
Yeah, love him. Yeah. Love him as a player. He loves us because, like you said, we got him an extra 0 on the end of his contract by talking him up on here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, wicked. Great intercept try. And it's like, you worry in them positions. I'd say you worry. I've only been in them positions 3 times against it, all in one game against India. Apart from that, I don't know how it feels. But, mate, he can play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he really can. He's got, like, we were joking about it, but, like, to double down on it and to be serious, calling the line out when there was injuries in the team and they had their star players out, I think it might have been last season, that's where we got him the big contract as a line out caller, is work off the ball. That is a skill, to shoot out the line, get an intercept pass and go basically the length of the, I know it was half the length, but the length of the pitch. And to finish the try like that, we've seen deft touches when he kicks the ball through.
What game was that in where he did?
Yeah, that was awesome. That
was Challenge Cup as well, wasn't it? Where he's just chipped the ball over someone, like all round second row. Jim, the skill level, second row's gone through the roof since you played.
Yeah. No, he has. Yeah, of course. He's basically got my jersey.
Yeah.
He has. But yeah, they've got some good lads at Gloucester. Freddie Clark's one of them, brilliant player. You know, is he in a conversation to play for England? It's hard, isn't it? Like Charlie Yules, who plays for England, there's talk of him leaving Bath to go there. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, does Freddie Clark still kick on and play better than him? So you've got Valrapava Ruskin, you've got Seb Blake, mentioned Freddie Clark, you've got Zach Mercer, Ruan Ackerman, friend of the show, Skips, Lewis Ludlow. Fantastic players in the pack. Varney at 9, Italian scrum half, Adam Hastings, Chris Harris.
Englefield started at 9 as well. He was good. Hell of a kick on him. Seb Atkinson's my favourite, though. They have got some good players. I just think that Sharks will have too much for them in the final. I'm hoping. Sorry, Gloucester fans. I apologise to absolutely no one. I want the Sharks to win, but I'm glad Gloucester have got to the final.
Well, that brings me nicely onto it, Andrew, because talking of the Sharks, my Sharks, well, you look at the team and you look at how the Hollywood Bet Sharks are doing in the URC and it doesn't really marry up. This is what Gloucester are going to be playing in the final. When you talk about South Africa and you talk about quality of players, like the Sharks have got some of the best players in the world, yet it hasn't transferred. And we'll get onto a little bit of the game, but they've got Oxenche, Springbok, Bongu Mbonambi, Springbok, Vincent Kok, Ebenezer Beth as well, Mazola Mapimpi, Lekanye Am. Who scored on the weekend, who was very, very good. Like,
tell me you're in the stands screaming Ma Pimpy when he scored the winner.
I didn't have the bollocks to do it in front of Sia Khaleesi. <Yeah. laughs>
Soft, Jim, you're soft.
Yeah, me and Sia Khaleesi were holding hands. Like, we're holding hands, so I thought it'd be a bit weird if I just scream Ma Pimpy. but yeah, they got some good players, mate. When you actually look at that and you name drop it, and there was a massive win for them against Clermont on Saturday at the Stoop of all places. Weird. Don't know why it was there. But Clermont gave them a proper game and for the majority of that game looked comfortable. Defensively, they looked a little bit off as well, where, again, if you go based on South Africa, that 13, the winger connection where they blitz up on the outside. But then physically as well, with them players that I've just named, I know Clermont are a team with physical players.
In transition. Yato,
for example, in the back row.
Mate, how good was his break?
Unreal.
Yeah.
How's he still going? I played against him.
He's about 40, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's about 45, yeah. They said he was 19 back then. But you got Fritz Lee as well. You got some quality players in that Clermont team. But physically, they were very good. They were good in the scrum. They were good at line-out drive. They were physical around the breakdown. So that's a big win for the Sharks, though, because of the context of their season, you know, and the amount of kind of travel and stuff that you kind of throw into the mix. It's a big ask for these South African teams. We've gone around the houses on it.
Oh, stop defending them, James. Stop defending them. They're all your friends. We all know they're your friends, Jim. Yeah, I'm delighted they won, actually. I am delighted they won because John Plumtree's come under a lot of pressure as well. He was my coach at the Sharks when I played out there. So I got a lot of time for John Plumtree. Some people don't, but I think he's a good bloke. And interestingly, you mentioned Sia Khaleesi, Jim. He was obviously watching his old team, but another Sia stepped up to the plate. Sia Masuku, tell the goal kicking that, and especially the conversion to put them ahead and win it for him effectively. Balls of steel, that boy.
Well, if you listened to the podcast last week, Eben Etzebeth name dropped him as a future talent. Oh. So there we go. Just all married up. It just everything lined up, didn't he? Came on, blew up the Irish, blew up Courtney Laws, called him out, and also talked up Sia Mazuku as well. And he had a blinder. He won him the game.
He did.
Hell of a kick at the end. And to be fair, Andrew, look, you know, like if we are going... If I may have the floor for now, a big shout out to the Hollywood Bet Sharks, because it is risky going down the route of building up the promotion and the marketing and the lead up. The fact that the game was at the Stoop to try and bring in South African fans. The Army and Navy game was on at 2:00. So the fact that people would have bought tickets for that months ago in the lead up. Mate, there was a good turnout. There was a good old turnout of South African fans. They bought the energy, they bought the noise and the fun. And that's not an easy ask to have the game at the Stoop and a French team like Clermont, who, I'm going to say it, yes, they've got history in the competition, but they're not a Toulouse or a Racing or, you know, like a Bordeaux with like these kind of headline current French global superstars. Like they're a team that are in transition.
Yeah.
So it was a good turnout and a good game and a massive win for them. And it was a close game, went right down to the wire. I was watching it with one eye. I could barely see for the majority of the game. Yeah, it was, I had the flu, I think.
have you finally stopped fawning over every South African person that you know? But anyway, it is good on that note to have a South African team in the Challenge Cup final at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. There's loads of Saffers, as we know, in London. They'll all come out and support them on the Friday night. And you're like the rugby guy. You're the same as him, mate. He's there. He's got his Sharks jersey on.
He was there. He was asking for you, actually.
I know he was. I sent him a message on...
He was.
Because he sent me a message.
He was there.
He sent me a message. I'm like, hang on, mate. You crawled out of all the Stormers' arses a few weeks ago. Like, I'm a Stormer. And now you've got the Sharks jersey on. You can't have it both ways. Basically, you and him, two peas in the same pod. Whoever's winning, you're all over them like a rash. So
yeah, well, he's an ambassador for Love All Rugby, though, isn't he? So he has to have the different jerseys on. And it's like, he'll switch it. He'll put the Clermont one if they win.
Yeah.
So that's not me. I'm just there in my bomber jacket. That's it. Just stood there watching.
But it is good to have him in the final. South African team, a presence. There's been question marks around the South Africans in the Investec Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. But it's good that the Sharks have gone full noise with all their Springboks and they want to win it because they want to be in the Investec Champions Cup next year as well, don't they? And that's probably their only way in.
Well, yeah. Well, there's talk, mate. There could be changes around it.
Go on.
Well, just not sustainable, is it? Mate, it's obvious. It is obvious that it's not sustainable to keep having the competition how it is with the South African teams in, with the amount of travel, like mental. So they're going back and then they're coming back to play in the final. And then they're going back. Well, obviously they're going back because they don't live here. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, they chose to... Mate,
it's crazy.
They chose,
like, it's just not sustainable.
They chose to leave Super Rugby and beg to come to the URC.
They pay.
Yeah.
True. They pay to be in the URC.
Exactly.
They pay to be in that competition. Yeah. So, I don't know. Hamstrung, I would say. And the French don't like them, innit?
No,
the French don't like travelling there.
That's the beauty of them beating a French team. The French hate them. And there they are.
They hate them. Yeah. Right, Andrew, we've missed it. Let's bring it back. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, the good. We'll call it the good, shall we?
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, let's call it the good. Yeah. Let's do it properly.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah, I've missed doing it, lads. And people have been coming at me going, this has to be in the ugly this week. I've not been on the pod, boys and girls, but I'm back. And here it is. We'll start off with the good then. And we're going to start off in the sevens, James. You're a big advocate of the sevens.
Yes. It's
had a rebrand. But Argentina's men get a shout out in the sevens as they finished as the sevens league winners over in Singapore. They didn't win it. New Zealand won it. But they get a massive shout out because they finished as league winners this season. So well done to the Argentina sevens. Over to Super Rugby, Jim. Bit of Super Ruggers. You love your Super Ruggers, don't you?
Well, I used to.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it goes to Tonga. Super Rugby went to Tonga for the very first time. So a massive shout out to Super Rugby Pacifica. They actually played a game over there where it was Moana Pacifica hosting the Highlanders. So a massive shout out to everyone spreading the love around the world. Tonga getting a game of Super Rugby. Who'd have thought it, eh? Sticking in Super Rugby then, we've got the Reds. They get a massive shout out in the goo. They beat the Crusaders in Christchurch for the first time this century. Les Kiss is doing an exceptional job along with Brad Davis, my old coach for the Reds. So massive shout out, beating the Saders. I know it's easy pickings at the minute, but they've not won there since 1999, Jim, which is how many years ago?
A long time.
Yeah, there we go. 25. So a big shout out to the Reds for beating the Crusaders. Sticking in Super Rugby, TJ Perenara gets a shout out. He has now broken the try scoring record of Super Rugby. He's the all-time highest ever try scorer. He nicked one off the bench at the weekend, up to 63 tries. So big shout out to him. Dr. Razzie Erasmus gets a shout out in the goo, Jim.
I was going to ask you if you're going to put that in. I was going to put him in, but you've done it, it's fine.
Yeah, we've got to put something South African in there because Jim's a big South African fanboy, but I'm a massive fan of Razzie myself. So Dr. Razzie Erasmus, the GOAT of coaches, received an honorary doctorate in coaching science last week. So big shout out to Razzie. Back into the EPCR Challenge Cup. Sharks and Gloucester get huge shout outs this week for winning their semi-finals. The Sharks are the first South African team to make an EPCR final since they were introduced into the competition. And Gloucester, check this out, Jim. Here's a stat for you. They make the final for a record-equaling fifth time of the Challenge Cup. So they're up there with the most times ever in a final. The fifth time in the final, that's not a record you want, really, because you want to be in the Champions Cup. But fair play to Gloucester.
You said it.
Yeah, it's their fifth and record-equaling Challenge Cup final appearance. A big shout-out to them. Over to the Champions Cup, the Investec Champions Cup. 82,300 people squeezed into Croke Park for Leinster versus Saints. So a massive shout-out to that. That was the competition record for fans watching a game. So all the Leinster fans, there's a fair few Saints fans there as well. Looked like an absolutely banging atmosphere. So big shout out to them. Toulouse get a shout out in the Goud. Of course they do. Breathtaking at times in that first half. But the Goud this week is going to go to Leinster and their Kiwi Irishman. I feel harsh saying it because they're fully fledged Irishmen. But Jameson Gibson-Park was world class. And James Lowe scored a hat-trick. First ever player to score a hat-trick in the semi-final. So that's why they get the Goud this week, Jim. The bad, few bits of bad. We're going to start off, we mentioned it, the Crusaders. They lost at home again to the Reds. They've now lost 4 out of 5 to the Aussie teams. Here's a stat for you. Under Razor, they played Australian teams 35 times, Jim. How many did they lose under Razor?
I'm going to say a handful. 5, 4.
2. They lost twice to Australian teams under Razor. 2 defeats in 35 games under Razor. They've now lost 4 out of 5 this season. Just shows you how good the All Blacks are going to be under Razor. What a coach. What a bloke. So Crusaders get a mention of the bad for that. What else was bad? French TV directors are going to get a mention of the bad for choosing replays that suit them. As we said earlier, we didn't see any of the replays of Untermack and his potential shoulder to the head of Esterhazen in that second semi-final. So French TV producers, they just do what they want, don't they, Jim?
Needs to change.
It does.
It's becoming
a joke.
Beyond a joke now.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But the bad this week goes to one place, one clown, one absolute idiot. That idiot is Joe Marler. What are you doing? You absolute mug. Like, slapping Ramos on the back of the head. You've cost your team the opportunity to try and win the game. You're an absolute clown. Always acting the fool. No wonder you're on the bench, son. Like, what are you doing, Joe Marler?
The coaches. Imagine the coaches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, you can joke about it and you can tweet about it after. Imagine the coaches.
Yeah.
What they're thinking.
Yeah, you're raging. So the bad this week goes to Joe Marler, the clown. And then the ugly. Two bits of ugly, actually, Jim. One quite funny, one not so funny. The first one is quite funny, but actually, when I've said it, it's not that funny. Poor old Blair King on my old nose. Have you had a look at his nose?
Oh, my snozzer. Yeah. My goodness me.
Yeah.
I saw him go down like it was a grenade, and I was like, get up, Blair. Get up, you posh butt. And then actually you see it, breaking your nose is actually
awful.
Very, very sore. Yeah. It's a very painful thing. I broke my nose quite bad. Tim Swinson, Swinno, headbutted me like in a tackle by mistake. Gloucester, the big one. Actually, talking of Gloucester, Gloucester Newcastle in the EDF Cup back in the day.
There you go.
So basically we called it the Cunts Cup. Yeah, he broke my nose. I went down like a sack of spuds, got back up, went out on the pitch. I was in a world of bother and they couldn't straighten it. And then it got straightened in training. I got kneed in the nose again and it is very painful. So I do feel Blair Kinghorn's pain.
Yeah, but history tells us, Jim, that game against Swinno, wasn't that the game where the picture was on Facebook the very next day?
Yes, that's the Willy Monster picture.
Well, I wouldn't call it a monster. Anyway, we'll move on. So Blair Kinghorn gets a mention in the ugly, but the ugly this week can only go to one place, and that is Billy Vunipola getting up to all sorts, getting tasered, got hit by the wallet first time, bounced off.
Where's the all sorts? What do you mean getting up to all sorts? He got tasered and took a taser. He's a better man than both of us.
Oh, mate, well, it depends what you consider as a better man, because I've never been tasered. If taking a taser is the sign of a better man than me, then, geez, I don't know what's wrong. But first taser in the wallet, obviously, that didn't touch the sides because he's been taking cash off Sarri's and salary cap issues for years. I'm joking, Sarri's fans. Second one took him down. But apparently, I've got a mate.
I bet he's the barman, isn't he?
Oh no, he was on the trip with the little Sarri's lads, and he said everything that was initially reported, it fucking happened. So deny, reaccuse, but either way, it's not a good look.
Mate, you can't say I've got a mate of a mate who was with the Sarri's crew. Who's the mate of the mate?
I'm not going to expose him.
Sources.
Yeah, they're sources.
Filthy.
Yeah, but it's not a good look. Billy Vunipola getting tasered, bottles smashed everywhere, chairs going wild, pinned down by about 10 Spanish cops, but it was just a misunderstanding. So Billy Vunipola, he gets the ugly this week.
Nice, Andrew.
Good to be back.
The good, the bad and the ugly. Missed it.
I missed everything.
Missed it. Right, Andrew. Very good. Did miss that. Very good. Get it? Right, some shout-outs. Let's get into it. Loads as always.
There is, yeah. I got a massive shout-out this week to the 20 girls from Ipswich who are doing the 24 peaks in 24 hours at the end of this month, raising as much money as they can for the My Name's Doddy Foundation. They've managed to raise a massive £32,188 so far, but they've set themselves a target of 40 grand before they complete the walk on the 24th of May. So if you can spare a few quid for a great cause, head to justgiving.com/team/24peaks.
Go well, ladies. Rob, you can do this one because I've got a big one at the end to do.
Right, there's a shout out for the Winchester Sevens, which is happening at the end of May. There's four competitions, free family activities, and gyms, not our gym, another gym, his famous hog roast and barbecues there, and there's a real ale tent as well. So if you're in the area and fancy a great day out with the family, head along to Winchester RFC on Saturday the 18th of May.
Rob, you read that in a way in which it sounds like you're definitely going.
I am, yeah, they're giving me a backhander to go, I think.
Mate, Winchester's a long way from Stockton, but Rob's down there. Rob is
too
there.
Posh. It's way too posh for him.
He read about the hog roast, he is there, trying to lick the crackling off everything.
Well, this is the thing, Andrew. Hog roast in Winchester is very different to what hog roast in Stockton is.
or Scotland.
Oh, gosh. Hey, talking of Scotland, big one this one. Just up the road from me, Curry Rugby Club, based in Edinburgh. They won the Prem at the weekend. 14 years in the making. But it means a little bit more. And I mentioned this on the podcast earlier in the year. A guy did a little bit of work for me, Grant Williamson, a.k.a. Scaly, who passed away earlier in the year. So well done, lads. That one's for you, Scaly. Big shout out to everyone at Curry. I know a few of the guys there. I walked the dog past people wearing Curry rugby shirts. So it is in my area. But thinking of you, Scaly, thinking of your family, thinking of your mates, and a big congratulations to everyone at Curry. It's a massive win to win the Premiership at the weekend.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. Congrats to everyone. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Andrew. He's back. He is back.
It's nice to have him back, isn't it?
It is good to be back, lads. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, he's just brought me down, just levelling me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, too big for your boots, Jim. But we're back. We're level. We're good to go. Thank you all for listening as well. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
Yeah, you know the drill. Rugby Spot.
Spotty pod.